So we're up to Acts, the ninth chapter. Saul has been converted. We studied that. Saul has now, after he was converted, gone on to Damascus. Remember, he had gotten letters from the chief priests so that he could go to Damascus and he could imprison those who were Christians. Saul, of course, is a Pharisee of Pharisees. He was educated at the feet of Gamaliel. He is the youngest person, as far as we know, who ever sat on the Sanhedrin. He is an achiever. He is a go-getter. He is definitely opposed to this sect of Judaism that is at that point following Christianity. So he is going to Damascus to find Christians, put them in chains, and take them back to Jerusalem where they can be tried. And undoubtedly, they would face the same kind of fate that Stephen faced. Now, this was no mean thing. It's 135 miles from Jerusalem to Damascus. So he had to go on the Roman road to get up to Damascus. Now, we don't have any idea where he was on this journey up to Damascus. And he could have taken either one of these roads. There are two roads that go, Roman roads, that go from Jerusalem up to Damascus. So we don't know where he was on that journey. He may have been real close to Damascus when he saw the Lord. He may have just been starting out when he saw the Lord. But anyway, he's made this 135-mile journey to find Christians and put them in prison and perhaps even kill them. So let's read. We'll begin in Acts 9 at verse 19. And what I'd like to do is ask someone to read this section and then tell me the important things that you see in this particular section. So who would like to read verses 19 through 22? And they're right here on the board. Go ahead.
And he took food and was strengthened. And he was certain days with the disciples that were at Damascus. And straightway in the synagogue, he proclaimed Jesus, that he is the Son of God. And all that heard him were amazed and said, is this not he that in Jerusalem made havoc of them that called on his name? And he came hither for this intent, that he might bring them bound before the chief priests. But Saul increased the more in strength and confounded the Jews that dwelt at Damascus, proving that this is the Christ.
So what do you see here?
I say that see that the same dedication and faith that he had in God before, the same zeal that he immediately after he repented, he turned the same exact zeal towards Jesus. And it was just amazing to everybody that he could be that way. But there was no, well, should I, shouldn't I? He was 100%, 1,000%. Convinced, and I'm sure gave faith to those people he was meeting with that he was preaching so strongly.
Good point. So Paul didn't really, other than deciding that Jesus was the Christ, was the Messiah, the promised one, he really didn't change. He did exactly what he had always been doing. You show him the way, he is 100% working that out. Good point. Anything else that you see in this?
Just always, care about his life.
Yeah, you think about what he gave up. He had an elevated position in Jerusalem. Enough that they were willing to give him letters to go to Damascus. So he just rejected all of that. Just like that. What do you think about these Christians in Damascus?
They were well aware of Paul, Saul, and his reputation, and they knew that he was on the way there to persecute. They had information, knew he was coming.
And, yeah. They knew he was coming, they expected him to get there, and they knew why he was coming. These are pretty special people. Can you think of something in our day that would be like this? Anybody had any experience like this? Yeah.
Something in our day like this, a gathering like that, or actually seeing a side, of talking around something, is that what you mean?
Well, I'm thinking of somebody that you would never expect to be a Christian, to be aligned with your understanding, and he turns it around just like that. This would be like the Pope coming into this assembly and saying, you know, I have given up on Catholicism. I'm sorry? Yeah. Well, that would be my response. Yeah, right. Or this would be, and there are examples of this kind of thing happening. I understand that Jeffrey Dahmer, after he was imprisoned, he is a mass murderer. After he was imprisoned, he learned the gospel. I understood that he was, I can't say, but can you imagine if you were sitting here in this assembly and Jeffrey Dahmer walked in? What about, Adolf Hitler could walk in? And I'd have, what I think that says is the power of the gospel is so overwhelming. And we don't always think that that's even possible, that people can make this kind of decision. Okay, so he's in Damascus now. He's confounding the Jews. How is he doing that? Okay, preaching Jesus. What have we seen in what Jesus says to the Jews? Jesus has been giving the Jewish leadership a really hard time. Remember his statement? He said, you think you know the scriptures, but these are they that testify of me. So all Paul was doing, Saul at this point, or Paul, all he's doing is taking the scriptures and proving that Jesus is the Messiah. That was pretty powerful. And these people, they didn't have any response. Now, no doubt they argued with him, but he's confounding them. So, what happened? Yeah.
I think it's notable that he did this at once, right after
Right.
And so he's telling about Jesus, but I think part of what his testimony would be what happened to him and his conversion story. And I think that, but that's something that we might minimize in our own lives, particularly if we grew up in the church, we don't think it was that dramatic, but in reality it was. And so to tell our conversion story, and I think all of us should probably put it kind of to the elevator talk, kind of reverse it in our heads, and have our story to share with people. So our story is powerful. The story of Jesus in our lives is powerful. And I think we should be able to share that. I think that's probably what Saul was sharing here.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. And her name is Kim, not Babe. Sorry. Okay. What happens next? Somebody want to read verses 23 through 25? Can I get somebody? Somebody at home, can you read verses 23 through 25? Now everybody's being bashful. Are you having trouble hearing from home? Okay.
And when many days were fulfilled, the Jews took counsel together to kill him. But their plot became known to Saul, and they watched the gates also day and night that they might kill him. But his disciples took him by night and led him down through the wall, lowering him in a basket.
Okay. What do you see as important in this paragraph? Okay. What's it tell you about the Jews?
They haven't changed much yet.
They haven't changed much. You have to remember, when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, what was the Jewish response? We got to kill him. When Jesus is being discussed, what's the Jewish response to Jesus? We got to kill him. This is the way that they've dealt with this kind of thing. So they're doing exactly what they've always done. But the plot gets back to Saul. Okay? And I think this is one of those situations where maybe Saul begins to understand a little bit about what Jesus meant when he said, when you go into a city and they don't want to listen to you. Remember, this is when he sent out the apostles on the limited commission. He said, shake the dust off your feet and go somewhere else. If they don't want to listen, don't beat your head on a stone. You know, I had a little meme on my wall for a while that said, never try to teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it annoys the pig. So I think Paul kind of concluded that there's no sense in trying to teach these pigs to sing. Yeah, but
you can actually have that happening in our very own families too.
Okay.
Doesn't really do any good every time you see that person to start dinging them on something. So maybe there'd be a different approach you would want to use in a situation like that.
Okay. Excellent point. This is how it affects us today. And I can't think of a closer relationship than in a family. And, you know, this is no doubt these Jews, some of them were probably known by the Apostle Paul. You have to remember the position that Paul had been in Jewish culture. So, no doubt this was discouraging to Paul. But the Christians let him down out of the city in a basket through the wall. He got away. That's because the city was surrounded by a wall. There were only so many gates, and the Jews knew if Paul is going to get out of the city, he's going to have to go through one of these gates. So they watched the gates. They were going to kill him.
Do we know how long it was after 50 days? I've got a note here referring to Galatians. It could have been as long as 2 years.
Could have been.
Yeah. But I think the point is he has followers. So he was effective. What he was doing was effective. There was a reason they wanted to kill him. If he wasn't effective, why would they even bother? So I think that's important that we don't miss that. That he had people following him based on what he was doing. He was telling the gospel story. He was telling about Jesus.
True. Had he been totally ineffective, they'd have just left him alone. But they wouldn't do that. So he leaves Jerusalem, or leaves Damascus, and he goes down to Jerusalem. So let me get somebody to read this particular section about him going down to Jerusalem. Go ahead.
They were all afraid of him, not believing that he was Simon. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto him how he had seen the Lord in vain, and that he had spoken to him, and how at Damascus he had spoken in the name of Jesus. And he was with them going in and going out at Jesus.
What do you see here as important?
Well, it was he that made such an impact negatively that it had gotten around and people were afraid of him. But Barnabas, if he's wrong, was, you know, letting him know that he had been making a difference to the contrary now. And he was frustrated. So.
Good point. Yeah.
That verse 28, he was with them going in and going out. I don't know whether or not the them is the apostles, but it makes me think of the fact that the apostles were to stay in Jerusalem, and Paul, being an apostle, had that same, to me, it looks like he had that same feeling that they were afraid to touch him in Jerusalem. God was protecting him in Jerusalem, because he's going in and going out. And it sounds like he's not hiding, you know, he's not with the other Christians having to worry about that. He's going in and he's going out. It's almost like he's got that same sort of protection from God in Jerusalem.
Could be. Yeah. Some translations say he circulated among them freely. Go ahead.
I was just going to say as well, just like sometimes when they were getting close to Jesus, he would just somehow, get through them. I mean, it didn't explain always how, but I'm going to say miraculously, you know, managed to avoid them.
Yeah. You know, I've read those statements where when Jesus went up to Jerusalem for the feast and they were trying to take him, and he just left. I don't know if I'm convinced that there was some special protection by God. I think he just left. And but I don't know. That's true. There was a huge crowd. Josephus says there would have been as many as 6 to 8 million people in Jerusalem for the feasts. Now, I don't, you know, you have to take some of those numbers with a bit of a grain of salt, but it was a big crowd. So I don't know about that, but it is interesting that he was circulating freely. What do you see in the Christians' response to him? He comes to Jerusalem. He wants to be with them. And they said no.
Well, their destiny was like they're supposed to as Christians.
Okay. Can you expand on that?
Well, they know him from before, his reputation. And he's been in Damascus for a long time. Well, they don't have internet. You know, things, word of mouth can move kind of slow. So he needs maybe someone to stand up for him, which Barnabas does.
Okay.
And he did take him to the apostles, and the offshoot of what he did, he says he's going with them in and out, and so circulating with, so he's participating with the apostles, and just like anything else, it doesn't happen overnight.
Okay.
That's okay. The way I look at it, keep in contact.
Okay. Yeah.
And I sort of think it sort of validates him as an apostle in the word, because he is associating with him. That's why I think that the apostles could stay there and the Jews were afraid to do anything, that he fit into exactly that same sort of category. And so whatever reason, they're not touching him, however God did that. But it's another validation of him being an apostle.
Hmm. That's interesting. I get the impression, I have not understood this. He was with them, the them.
Look back at verse 27, brought him to the apostles.
Right, brought him to the apostles. But he essayed to join himself to the disciples. So that's the way I understood it. But I can't be absolutely certain. Yeah. Kim.
At Barnabas, you go back to the fourth chapter, says Joseph, and verse 36, Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field in your own and bought. And brought them that he included the apostles' feet. So Barnabas is playing quite a role. He has some credibility with the apostles. He has some credibility with the disciples. They know who he is. He's obviously wealthy. It's kind of interesting because he was a Levite and he shouldn't have owned land, but he owned some land. Maybe it's his wife's property, or they're not observing that anymore. I don't know. But anyway, he has some credibility, and he sends his credibility to vouch for Saul. And I think that's notable.
Okay. Have you ever been in that situation where you're asked to vouch for somebody?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
it's work-related, I have, but yeah. Not necessarily in church.
It's a little scary to vouch for somebody. You're putting yourself on the line when you do that.
And he had quite a reputation that was, you know, could have been solid that he had enough.
Right. Right. Apparently, he had Googled him. No, I'm just teasing. I think Bob makes a good point. This is the way things happened then. You couldn't Google somebody. If you wanted to know whether I had ever been arrested, you could do an internet search and you could find that out, because that's public record. But they didn't have that. So Barnabas speaks up for him. Good point. Have you ever been in the situation where you move from one place to another? And you wanted to be a part of the church? Did anybody ask you a question? Or did they just welcome you with open arms unquestioningly.
They always ask.
Okay.
Questions of us when we were moving, and maybe made a phone call or two to the congregation that we left, you know, and just getting acquainted with us as we, Ron was in the military, and, you know, as we moved from place to place, just to kind of make sure they knew where we stood on things and what kind of people we were, you know.
Okay. Anybody else had experience with that? Yeah, Lee.
That's why the letter that my husband and I brought with us was so important. And it was from the congregation that we had attended many years, and it validated our faithfulness and who we were and what we were going to expect from the congregation that we had enjoyed it.
Some value to that. That's kind of being proactive and expecting people to have questions. And so you get a letter from the church where you were worshiping to the church where you're going, and that way you have an introduction. Yeah, Wes. Yeah, I guess we could be that blunt. You know, we don't want to scare people off, but there's some value in being blunt. Yeah, Lee or Carol.
If you're going to be unified, you have to know that it's a similar fit in the Lord. You don't need to know lots of other things, but you need the unity in the Lord. And that's what these people were seeking. And then after they found it, that's what they vouched for.
Okay. Okay. So there's nothing untoward about asking when Kim and I moved to Salem, or when I moved to Salem and Kim was eventually going to join me in Salem. The elder sat down with me and Kim, and we had a discussion like this. When we moved to Spokane, we had a discussion like this. The elder sat down with us and asked us a question. It's not, there is no censure of the Christians there in Jerusalem for saying, we need to know who you are. Okay. We're not covering things as fast as Lenny does. So next section, we may not get to Peter this morning, but that's okay. We can get to Peter next week. So next, what happens to Paul when he's in Jerusalem? Somebody want to read 29 through 31?
And he was talking and arguing with Hellenistic Jews. They were attempting to put him to death. But when the brethren learned of it, they brought him down to Caesarea and sent him away to Tarsus. So the church throughout all Judea, Galilee, Samaria, enjoyed peace. He built up, going on in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Spirit, continued to increase.
Okay. Difficult question. Why do you think he was opposed by the Grecian Jews, the Hellenistic Jews? Yeah, in a sense, but remember that the Hellenists, they have they have been discriminated against. We already saw that. Remember when they made the point that our widows are being neglected in the daily administration? So the Hellenists know about discrimination. Are these Jews, or do you think that they're Hellenists among the disciples that are opposed to him? Anybody? You would say it's the Jews that are opposed to him.
And I think you mentioned that, you know, when you're low man on totem pole, sometimes you speak the party lines louder and stronger than anybody else. And so to fit in, they could be just really doing the work of the others so that they fit in there.
Could be. Yeah.
Stephen had also debated the Hellenistic Jews, in a sense, Saul picked up where he was.
Okay. That would seem to indicate that this is Hellenists outside of the church, not Hellenists that had been, the Hellenistic Jews that had been converted. Okay. I just found it interesting that it was the Hellenists that opposed him. And remember, the Hellenists would have had difficulty with circumcision, even Christians. The Hellenist Jews didn't circumcise their children. They didn't speak Yiddish or Hebrew. They didn't give their children Hebrew names. And for the most part, they didn't live in Judea. That's why they're called Hellenists. I just find it interesting that it's the Hellenists that opposed him. Yeah.
I think that last point that you have, they're the ones who are out there. And he's the apostle who is separate, and his job is to be out there. And so I think it is a big thing that they're not Jews from Jerusalem. They're in his territory, and he's messing with them.
Okay. Could be. And there could be some value to the notion that when you're low man on the totem pole, you go overboard. That could be. I'm sorry? Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Another piece that even though they may be Jews, but they believe a different way than somebody else with a different law, different religion.
Well, it wasn't different in many senses. The Hellenists were not the people that are respected in Jerusalem as being the devout ones. Okay. These were people who, like I say, these four distinguishing characteristics, they didn't circumcise their children. They wanted to have a relationship with the Roman authorities. They were politically more savvy. So they didn't circumcise their children. They didn't give them Jewish names like Timothy. He wasn't circumcised. He didn't have a Jewish name. Okay. There's a sense that Paul is a Hellenist, except that Paul crossed the line and came down to Jerusalem. Paul was born in Tarsus. Okay. So what that means is He's got a strike against him. The Jews were incredibly racist. If you didn't live in Jerusalem, you weren't really a Jew. Yeah.
I think that's your point, is that the Jews who lived in Samaria, they considered themselves Jews, even though they worshiped God with their own personal slant. And that's the same thing I think Linda was saying, is that because they're living in a different spot, they've changed their religion, but they still are Jews by nationality.
Okay. Could be. I don't know. It's something to think about. Yeah, Ron. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, this is just another way to get Paul out among the Gentiles where he's supposed to be.
Okay. Maybe that's God doing it.
Could be.
Because remember, God has decided that Paul is going to be the apostle to the Gentiles. He's going to bear my name among the Gentiles. So, persecution may be God's way of saying, I want you to be out among the Gentiles, not in Jerusalem. I don't know. And remember, that runs contrary to what Paul had thought would be the appropriate place for him. He thought, I need to go to the Jews. They know me. And I can argue with the Jews. And God said, no, I want to send you to the Gentiles. Don't know. Don't know. My particular forte is being able to argue with statistics. So God wants me to be among the statisticians. So I went to Salem. I'm among the statisticians. And God said, no, you're not going to stay here. Yeah, Kim.
I was going to say, well, we know the effect of it. And the effect of it is the church throughout Judea, Galilee, and Samaria has peace. They're being edified, they're walking in the fear of the Lord and comforting with the Spirit, and we were multiplying. So we know the effect of what happened, that he left them with the Jews.
Okay.
They brought him to their ancestors.
Okay.
So, you know, whether this was part of God's, I mean, I think it was God's, but whether or not, you know, some of the turmoil was created by God, or just the setting of having all of these different sects of the Jews trying to get along, trying to figure it out, and they're under Roman authority still, you know, that they're just trying to make their way, and it seems like there are a lot of hotheads. People are trying, if you don't agree with them, it's okay. it's very, a different kind of a setting that we're accustomed to. But we know the effect of what happened.
Yeah. Yes.
I think we also have to remember that the message didn't go out to the Gentiles for, what is it, 10 years?
Right.
So he was in Jerusalem maybe a lot longer than this verse makes it sounds like.
That's true. We don't know how long he was in Jerusalem. But it is interesting. And there's a sense in which, if you look at the life of Paul, he goes to Damascus, persecution, he runs away. Goes to Jerusalem, persecution, he runs away. Is that, that's a rather pejorative way of looking at what Paul did. And no doubt there were people who said, hey, every time it gets hot, you run away. And that's not the case. I think it's just a narrative. And the purpose of the narrative, remember, is to always let us see what God is doing. Okay? Other Bob. No, you didn't. You're not bidding. Okay. Other questions? Comments?
Well, I would have a comment, I guess. I have a problem getting this all sorted out in my head because they're under Roman rule and they're also under Jewish rule. So you have a religious government and a pagan government in power at the same time.
Right.
And we look around us even today and we see how corrupt a lot of, well, every government is, including all the religious governments. So
good point. And you see the Sadducees? The Sadducees were a group that kind of bridged that and said, hey, guys, we can get along with the Romans. We don't have to be constantly in opposition to the Pharisees, on the other hand, said, no, we can't have anything to do with the Romans. And, you know, you had the zealots like some of the apostles who wanted to go fight with the Romans, like the Maccabees had fought. It's only been about 100 and at this point 50 years since the Maccabean War. And that was what threw off or relieved some of the Roman oppression. So, like you say, you got a lot of factions. You got a corrupt religious institution. You got a corrupt civil institution. And you got people that are kind of trying to bridge this gap. And then you got some other people who say, we're not going to have anything to do with it.
So as far as Paul leaving town because it gets hot, well, he's leaving town all the time then because it's always hot.
Yeah, that's a good point.